next case of the day, which is State versus Kitka. This is the case of State versus Kitka. Ms. O'Loughlin, good morning to you. And Ms. Osborne, good morning to you again. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin? Ms. O'Loughlin, you may approach and you may proceed. You may.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, counsel. I'm going to lead in with, this is approximately my fifth or sixth time in the last 6 months, so I didn't bring my punch card, but I am here again on, hopefully, I think this will be the last of the litany of speedy trial COVID cases that I belabor before this court, but here I am again. I'm going to concede that most of the issues that I've addressed in terms of the speedy trial portion of this brief was filed contemporaneous with State v. Robertson, State v. Abernathy. I know that this court, that was also my case, so I'm well aware of what the court's findings are in terms of State v. Abernathy. So I'm not going to belabor the speedy trial point, the statutory speedy trial claim, except to say, because I think this court in State v. Chase, State v. Brown, State v. Abernathy has issued a litany of opinions in terms of whether good cause exists for the COVID continuances that are outlined in the brief. So I think I would be somewhat shooting a fish in a barrel if I were to again argue that issue before the court. What I will point out, as I argued in State v. Robertson, and again, I know that I am preaching to the wrong forum here, that this is a legislative issue, but I would point out in terms of speedy trial that the one continuance that put this case past, if arguably, if it's a Mortensen issue or a 29-1207 issue, would be the August 5th, 2020 motion to continue, oral motion to continue in this case. I'm going to make the argument, because I think it bears repeating, that the reason that that motion was made was because the state didn't comply with the discovery. That argument is made on the same day, on the August 5th argument. The court finds that the state did not comply with the discovery and that had 7 days to comply with the discovery. Again, I've argued...
Before you go too far, that was on the finding that the defendant waived speedy trial rights based on that continuance. That's an alternative finding, right? Because the district court also found, aside from that, that there were enough excludable periods of delay based on the continuances that there that time remained to try the defendant, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. If we're applying what this court has previously found in State v. Chase, State v. Brown, State v. Abernathy, that the COVID continuances would constitute good cause under 29-1207.
So if you're not challenging the finding that the COVID continuances are good cause, the motion for discharge was properly denied, correct?
Well, I'm going to belabor the point again that under State v. Mortensen and 29-1207, that because the state failed to comply with the discovery request, again, the defense is left with no recourse.
But Mortensen, that's a separate argument. The district court said, A, you waived your speedy trial rights by filing this motion for a continuance that moved it outside the period, and B, all the COVID continuances add up to enough excludable time. And so even if we were to agree with you on A, don't you still lose under the COVID continuances?
Well, I'm not prepared to concede that the COVID continuances are in fact good cause. I will agree that this court has addressed this issue ad nauseum.
Sure, but their alternative, can you speak to whether their alternative findings and whether if we adhere to Chase and Brown and Abernathy, then there's enough time and there's no error in denying the statutory speedy trial?
If the court applies the rationale that it has in State v. Brown, State v. Chase, and State v. Abernathy, I would agree with Your Honor.
Do you have any argument that these continuances are different than those in some way, such that even if we were to adhere to Chase and Brown and Abernathy, that this court erred by finding these continuances excludable for good cause?
Judge, I don't, because I think it would be I think it would be duplicative to argue when the same exact documents are filed in State v. Abernathy, State v. Robertson, that are before that the state filed in support of its motion. And if the court found in State v. Abernathy that it's permissible to reopen the record to do it after the fact, these orders were done contemporaneous or within a day or two of the motion to continue. So I think it wouldn't be a valid argument for me to say whether I agree or not agree with State v. Brown, State v. Chase, and State v. Abernathy is not for the purview of this court, but I would agree that the substance of the documents submitted in support of the state's motion to continue are the same as they were in those cases.
You would like us to overrule those three cases?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
What I would really like to focus on, and I will conclude that portion of the statutory speedy trial argument to say, though, that if you, again, I'm not going to belabor State v. Mortensen or State v. or 29-1207, that the defense is left with absolutely no recourse when under speedy trial when the state fails to comply with its obligations, and that if it pushes it out past, that we have then, under 29-1207, reportedly waived our speedy trial right. What I would like to state, though, that if you exclude the COVID portion and apply the applicable portions that are attributable to the defendant, that time is 164 days, and it would be my estimation that speedy trial would have run on February 10th of 2021. So that's a back-ended way to address what the court asked me previously. What I'd like to focus my argument on, and with the court's indulgence and understanding that I'm asking the forum, particularly in terms of State v. Abernathy. That opinion came down addressing that jurisdiction is not proper to bring a contemporaneous argument, even a non-frivolous statutory speedy trial claim, with the constitutional argument. And the courts, and it's my understanding that other than an appellate court in State v. Williams, that was an issue of first blush before this court. What I beg the court's indulgence is that if for guidance in terms as for my trial brethren and for those of us in the practicing field, State v. Abernathy indicates that a constitutional claim cannot be brought contemporaneous with a statutory speedy trial claim. What it does indicate, and whether I agree or disagree with that opinion, it indicates that it's two different balancing tests. One, that statutory speedy trial claim is a mathematical issue. A constitutional claim is a balancing test, and there the two shall meet. Understandably, however, what it does say in Abernathy is that such a claim should be brought at the end of trial. And I guess I'm asking for guidance as a result as what the end of trial means. Does that mean, and perhaps this is not the proper forum to bring this, but I would argue that it is the proper forum, what does the end of that trial mean? Does that mean at the end of trial, prior to sentencing? Does that mean at the end of sentencing? Does that mean contemporaneous with a post-conviction? What? And so I'm arguing, does that mean that it needs to be filed and this court says we don't have jurisdiction? So understandably, my argument is, and I know that pursuant to State v. Abernathy, this court's view is going to be, I would respectfully disagree, that this court does not have jurisdiction to hear that argument. But in this particular case, in Mr. Kitka's case, there is a strong constitutional argument, and I do believe that prejudice under the prejudice prong can be found. If the court's not prepared to hear that, I won't go into the merits of why I believe a constitutional claim is valid in this particular case. So with that, I'll submit my argument, but that's my argument at this point in time. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Ms. Osborne, good morning again.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Jordan Osborne, Assistant Attorney General, representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska. Abernathy was just discussed. The court held that appellate courts lack jurisdiction to review constitutional speed trial claims in an interlocutory appeal, so I'm not going to address that. The only issue before the court here is the statutory speedy trial claim. So at the outset, I want to just mention that the appellant's brief contains absolutely no explanation whatsoever of why the district court allegedly erred in finding the periods of delay resulting from the state's motions to continue were not excludable periods. There's merely just this conclusory allegation that the district court improperly determined those periods were excludable for purposes of statutory speedy trial. That's really all that's provided. Even here, after the appellant's argument, I still have no idea why the appellant believes that the district court erred in excluding those periods. And this court stated in State versus Chase, where an appellate brief contains conclusory assertions unsupported by a coherent analytical argument, the appellant fails to satisfy the requirement the party asserting the alleged error must both specifically sign and specifically argue that in the initial brief.
Is there some indication in the record or as you perceive appellant's argument about the state not complying with discovery deadlines that might impact how days are counted?
The only argument that's articulated in the appellant's brief, sufficiently articulated, is what the appellant's counsel just spoke about, the Mortensen issue, the 29-12074B waiver. That's all that's specifically discussed and argued in the brief. The actual, the error that's alleged that the district court improperly excluded the three states' continuances is not argued in the brief. There's no rationale or reasoning for why the appellant believes that that was incorrect. She just says it's incorrect. So just as an initial matter, the state would submit that so far as the appellant is alleging that those three states' continuances were improperly excluded, the appellant has failed to satisfy the requirement that the party asserting the error must specifically argue it in the initial brief. And I think that alone would resolve this entire appeal. As for the merits of those specific excludable periods, the state's continuances, I guess I'm a little bit unsure if the appellant is conceding those periods or not, but the first period is of course, a COVID continuance. That motion was granted May 27th. The trial had been scheduled for June 18th, and that's a period that was at the beginning of the COVID pandemic. The state submitted several of these general orders, directed health measures about the pandemic, and in Chase and Brown, this court has found that this same time period was excludable under 29-12074F for good cause because of the COVID-19 pandemic, so there was no clear error in the district court making that same finding. Just briefly addressing that waiver issue, that, as Justice Papik has made very clear, that's an alternative rationale. That would only apply if that first state's COVID continuance, for whatever reason, was not excludable. And if that first state's continuance was not excludable, then what you would have is after you've accounted for all the other excludable periods, which my understanding are not contested, then you would have a speedy trial deadline of October 23rd, and that August 5th continuance by the appellant moved the trial out to November 12th, past that deadline date, so that under the plain language of the statute 29-12074B, the appellant waived his right to speedy trial. But again, that only applies if that first COVID continuance, for whatever reason, would not be excludable under 4F. So then the second COVID continuance There was a sua sponte continuance by the district court on December 30th. Again, that's followed up then by a state's motion to continue for the exact same reason, for the COVID-19 pandemic. Again, the district court considered various administrative orders, directed health measures, and one in particular, the presiding judge of the Second Judicial District found that Suffolk County was unable to conduct a jury trial under the current conditions and limitations for January 2021 because of the COVID-19 pandemic. In that order, all jurors for that January 2021 jury term were excused from service. So based on those reasons, the district court found that there was good cause to continue the matter because of COVID-19 pandemic, and also found that it's excludable under 29-1207-4F. Again, the Nebraska appellate courts have upheld a finding of good cause because of the COVID pandemic under 4F for the same time period, the January 2021 time frame, in State versus Young and State versus Moody. And so again, there's no clear error in the district court making that same finding. And then the last state's continuance has to do with the unavailability of the lead investigator, which is actually not even a COVID issue. It's under 4CI, and the district court was provided with an affidavit and that basically set out that lead investigator was going to be unavailable because of military training, that she would be available when she returned, and the court made those findings that all of the findings under 4CI were met, that her testimony would be material. The state had sent her a notice to appear. She's unavailable because of the military training, and then she would be available when that was concluded.
This is the witness who went to Texas? Or is that a different
no,
witness?
No, the victim lived in Texas. And then another witness, I think a relative of the victim, also lived in Texas. The investigator had 3 days of military training that happened to fall on that November 12th date, that trial date. The district court determined that that period was properly excluded. There's no clear error in that finding as well. So that addresses what I presume to be the only contested issues, because I think it was very unclear from the appellate's brief exactly what was contested and what wasn't. But I'm presuming that all the remaining periods were not contested. And unless the court has specific questions, I would just submit it on the brief. I'd ask that you affirm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 1 minute, 47 seconds.
1 minute and 47 seconds. Ms. O'Loughlin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge, I guess I would respectfully disagree with counsel's assertion that there's no claim sought in the brief, in the appellant's brief. Section 1 of the appellant's brief clearly outlines what we believe to be the Mortensen issue in this case and what's supported in the record in that. Additionally, on pages 18 and 19 of the appellant's brief, it clearly goes into the continuances and the COVID continuances and why we believe that was not good cause. So I'm not sure if counsel's saying that those issues are not contested, in that counsel's that we're agreeing with those, because the record is replete with the fact that Mr. Kitka did everything that this court, in my opinion, would have asked him to do. He objected to every continuance. There was a hearing held. He requested that the depositions of the witnesses be maybe permitted to finish my comment.
You may finish.
That the witnesses, the primary witness, that deposition be committed in person, that he asserted his right to trial on every occasion afforded to him, on every continuance that was supported in the record by the court, that the court made a finding that good cause existed under 29-1207 on each instance. So if counsel's indicating that we're not contesting that, we are contesting that. I am also not conceding whether good cause exists or not in the record. What I am relating is, in response to the justice's question, that the documents provided by the state in support of Their motions to continue under COVID are similar in nature as have been previously reviewed by this court to make a finding of good cause under State v. Robinson, State v. Abernathy, and additionally in State v. Brown, Chase, and Moody. So just want to make that point clear. Still our contention, though, that 526 days passed from the point of the filing of this information to the motion to discharge. 200 of those days, Mr. Kitka spent in custody. That may or may not be a constitutional argument. That, again, I would ask this court for some defining role and when that is appropriate to bring under the context. With that, I would ask that you grant the relief sought.
Thank you very much. Counsel, that concludes arguments in State versus Kitka. You are excused, and the court is adjourned.